Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network. I tell you, it's election eve. Yes, one way or another, we should know something tomorrow night as far as who will be president of these here United States. You know, at this point, I think people are just ready to get this over with. This has got to be one of the most negative campaigns that I've seen in my 48 years and 30 years of voting. I mean, and it's not just the president's race, folks. I mean, this is incredible, the garbage that these parties are putting out in their ads. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how, you know, we don't have libelous and slander charges coming against half of the people who are putting these ads out. I mean, blatant lies. It's incredible to me what everybody is getting away with when it comes to campaigns. You know, if half the lies that are told against some of these candidates, if I were to use those same lies against one of you, you would own me lock, stock, and barrel in a court case. It's that simple. And I can't get over the way that these guys are allowed to get away with all the lies and the negative campaigning, and we wonder why people are so turned off to the voting process. Mr. Martin is not with us just yet, folks. I'm not sure where he's at. It's typical, you know, sometimes Ed, you know, he still runs that business that Obama built, and, you know, sometimes he runs just a little bit late accordingly, so he should be here momentarily, I would assume. In the meantime, you know, story out today at LouisvillePolitics.com. We're going to start the show with this story, and why are we going to start the show with this story? One, I'm going to toot my own horn. I mean, let's face facts here. You know, this is part of the Louisville Politics promotion, the MVM Radio Network. So we're going to toot our own horn and get our stories out there at LouisvillePolitics.com. But two, this story concerns the 37th State Senate District race and Judge Charlie Cunningham. And Charlie Cunningham should be brought up on charges. This is a very disturbing situation with this judge. It's not the first time he's been in hot water, but this could be the most blatant unjust thing I think I've seen from a judge on the bench. And before we get there, Ed Martin is joining us now. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Oh, all right, sir.
Did you get a chance to see the latest story I put out today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, well, I didn't see it today, but I do know that I did see the one about your rant against Cunningham and him and judgment and everything.
Oh, that was Friday. It gets even worse. Over the weekend, I was able to do some more research. I actually started going through the Kentucky Court of Appeals records and everything else over the weekend, because I remember Cunningham had some questionable judgment back in the 2008 elections. One of those cases was yours, actually. You know, but yours was
different. Well, his judgment, he was spot on and
mine. but he actually made the wrong judgment, according to the Court of Appeals. But that's neither here nor there. The fact was both.
Yeah, that is debatable, because the Court of Appeals, in my case, it was a three-judge panel, and one of them sided with Cunningham forcefully. It's just, you know, I lost 2-1. So
yeah, it was overturned. So again, Cunningham was
barely
wrong. It doesn't matter. That's like going into a court.
To be honest, he'd have been right if we'd have got all the way up to the state Supreme Court, but we ran out of time.
No, that's what you think. You don't know that. We don't have a clue what state Supreme Court's going to rule. That's the whole problem. See, now, Ed, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is exactly one of the things I'm talking about with people in the court system. You know, the Court of Appeals overturned Judge Cunningham in your case, said he was wrong. It doesn't matter whether the vote was 2-1 or 3-0. The fact was he was overturned. That's like going into a jury, you know, and all you have to have is a majority ruling, and 7 out of 12 jurors find you guilty. You're guilty. Doesn't matter what the other five say. It don't matter. In this case, though, we're actually not going to talk about your case. I wasn't actually talking about your case. I just wanted to mention that, give you a little bit of props here. But, you know, one of the cases that Charlie Cunningham decided in 2008 is very, very disturbing, because it had to do with eligibility. And this is a case where he tried to help to benefit the Democrats once again. He was overturned at the Court of Appeals. The case involves a candidate by the name of Michael Perkins, who was running for District 18 Metro Council as a Democrat. For you court buffs who want to look everything up, the case number is 2008-CA-001604-I. That's your case number for you buffs that know how to use the internet and get that information. But here's the thing. Okay, here's what the deal was. Perkins won the Democratic primary for District 18 Metro Council seat. He won the Democratic primary. However, less than a month after the primary, on June the 5th of 2008, Perkins, for whatever reason, decided to withdraw from the race. He followed the rules of KRS 118.212. He filed notice with the Jefferson County Clerk. The Board of Elections was notified, signed a statement that he was not going to accept a nomination or election as a Democratic candidate for that seat. At that point, his candidacy is over. Nothing can be done about it. Well, over a month later, Perkins decided he wanted to rescind his withdrawal. And, of course, the Board of Elections and the Jefferson County Clerk said, "You're nuts. You can't," which was the truth. So what did he do? Well, he goes through the Democratic circles. They want a candidate for this seat, and they go to none other than Judge Cunningham, because Judge Cunningham loves to take these daggone cases where he can try to benefit the Democrats. And Judge Cunningham issued an order. This is the truth here. This is ridiculous. Cunningham actually issued an order from the bench declaring that Perkins was a bona fide candidate, even though there was no statute, law, authority that would allow him to decide that. That's incredible to me. This guy is actually making up rules on the bench. So it goes to the Kentucky Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals unanimous telling him he's full of garbage. And they basically made a couple of statements. One of us, we are not at liberty to add or subtract from legislative enactment, nor discover meaning not reasonably ascertainable from the language used. So they're saying that this guy made up a rule, made up a law so that the Perkins could be reinstated. They also went on to say that, you know, judges are not free to amend an otherwise plain and unambiguous statute by adding provisions to law. So this guy is basically chastised. And that's what's alarming to me. Twice this happened in 2008 by this judge. He's been chastised by the Court of Appeals. Why he has not been brought up on charges is beyond me. But that's bad enough. Judges want to play politics on the bench, Ed, right? A lot of them do that. So that's bad enough. Here's the great one, though. In the case of Chris Thieneman, the Judge Cunningham has decided to wait until after the election to rule on. He has got some serious problems about even hearing this case. For one thing, Chris Thieneman has already been found legal twice by previous judges for the same damn thing. Is he a legal candidate or not? So the case should have been thrown out as a nuisance suit anyway. But it wasn't, because you go to Cunningham. He's a different judge than the other two, and this is a Democrat's favorite judge. So you go to Cunningham, and he puts it in his court to do what he's paid to do, whether above or below the board. You guys can make your own mind up on that. But what makes this interesting is Cunningham has a personal relationship with Thieneman and still heard the case. He has got a major ethical problem here. What people may not know about Charlie Cunningham, you know, most of you guys may have heard of Cunningham's Doors. Have you heard those commercials, Ed?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, pretty famous around these parts, right? Charlie Cunningham owns
it. Oh, yeah.
He owns that company. When Chris Thieneman was building the Fort Knox location, he took bids, as any contractor does, took bids for the door work. Cunningham actually bid on putting the doors on that property and did not win the bid. But as a consolation prize, Cunningham, this word just gets so funny, it's unreal. As a consolation prize, Cunningham was awarded the contract to do all the repair and maintenance work on the doors in that facility. This is the same facility that has the apartment overhead that Chris Thieneman lives in. And he does live there, folks. I've been there. I know. Okay? So this is at the crux of everything. But in July of this year, less than 4 months ago, Thieneman, before any of this ever came to Cunningham for anything else, had already been decided by other judges, Thieneman basically fired Cunningham overhead doors. And Cunningham and his family lost that business. Now, for whatever reason, he actually fired them, let them go in July. They no longer work for the Fort Knox storage or anything else. Explain to me how Judge Charlie Cunningham can now hear a case against Chris Thieneman in a fair and impartial way.
Well, I don't know. I mean, without you know, one has to know his interest in the company, but
he started the company, Ed. He started the company. He runs that company with his family. There's no interest in the company. He's on it. Go to the Secretary of State's website. Look at the business filings. Guess who signs off on all those things? Is one of the corporate officers. Charles L. Cunningham Jr. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's what I've asked, and I haven't gone there, so yeah. I mean, yeah, it definitely doesn't sound that great. Nope.
This is totally illegal. This was an immediate recusal from this case. This judge had no right listening to this case. When this thing goes, no matter which way it goes, it's going to continue to be fought. And I'm actually going to bring up charges. As a resident of the 37th State Senate District, I've got standing in this thing. And as everybody knows in this town, when I've got standing, I take action. And I'm going to go ahead and probably file the charges myself with the Judicial Conduct Commission against Charlie Cunningham. And I'm going to go to anybody and everybody I can to have a hearing and see if we can't get his ass removed from the bench. This is so blatantly obvious. I mean, there is no way to lie, cheat, steal, or create doubt in this situation. Less than 4 months ago, he was essentially fired from doing business with Fort Locke Storage and Chris Thieneman. At that point, there can be no objectivity. Doesn't matter what you say. In the eyes of the law, this is an immediate recusal from this case. So it doesn't matter what anybody thinks about Chris Thieneman on a personal level. It doesn't matter what they believe or don't believe. Okay, the bottom line is, in this particular case, Cunningham was not the man who had the right to listen to this at all. So that's it. Period. That's the bottom line. So I just want to make sure that we knew that, because the Court of Appeals, and you know, I'm already getting chastised by Dale the Truth in the chat room. It's okay, Dale. We know what you think about Thieneman. We're not talking about Thieneman. We're talking about a law case here. I understand where you stand on that, Dale. We've talked about that many times. I don't care if Thieneman is pro this or anti that at this point. I'm talking about a point of law with a judge. But the situation for me is this, though, because when he did that, he created a serious ethical problem. But more importantly, the Court of Appeals actually ruled in the Perkins case as well that there is damage to your opponent when you make faulty rulings like this. So whether it's Chris Thieneman on the ballot or Ed Martin on the ballot or Ed Springsteen on the ballot or anybody else on the ballot, the reality is this judge knowingly, willfully did something to give an unfair advantage to an opponent in that election. And that's a serious concern. But I wanted to put that out there because it has to be. The election's tomorrow morning. The mainstream media has not done one thing to tell the truth or set the record straight. And that's what put me involved in the process in the first place. So it's incredible to me. So moving on, Ed, Obama versus Romney. What are we going to see tomorrow?
Round one. I hate to say it, but I think that's what you're going to see is round one. such a close race. And the thing is, I think it's going to be close, and not in Kentucky, but in the battleground states, I think it's going to be close enough in a number of states. We're not just going to have one Florida, mm-hmm. you know, dangling Chad or whatever. We have two or three. So,
But does that really become a problem?
We got all the absentee, all the mail-in ballots, all the early voting. We've got... You got the hurricane disrupting, no matter what the turnout, no matter what the result, whoever doesn't come up smelling like a rose in New York and on the East Coast, you know they're going to sue. We're going to have to hold off and wait and see, and there's going to be challenges galore. I think it could be a mess.
Well, I tell you, you bring up some interesting things here, but you know, speaking of New York and New Jersey, you know, from Hurricane Sandy. I don't know if you saw this story or not, but Chris Christie, New Jersey, has decided he's going to allow residents who are displaced by the Superstorm Sandy, they're going to be able to vote by email or fax, which is going to be interesting, too. Apparently, there's a couple of different questions about this, exactly how it's supposed to be done. But from what I gather, essentially, you know, they're using something that already exists because they allow electronic voting for emergency workers, you know, military and things like that. So anybody that's overseas in the military, so essentially expanding that, I guess, if you will, for anybody who's been displaced by the hurricane. Do you see that as being good or bad, though?
I see it as being good. You know, I think longer term, I'm sure there'll be some bugs to be worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, longer term, since you can't do anything on a computer unless you, you know, as long as it's a you know, a fairly short circuit. You go bouncing around, you know, bouncing it off of servers all over Uzbekistan and stuff. it's going to get suspicious. But outside of that, as you covered yourself, it's not real hard to pin down the server numbers and the and the code where it comes from. So I think at some point, I do think it's going to be a good thing because you can actually make computer communication, computer transactions pretty damn secure. And this one probably will be again. This is round one. I'm sure there's going to be challenges to whoever loses in the computer fax game or whatever. I'm sure they're going to be upset. I'm sure they're going to challenge the black letter law. It's like, this is not actually a provision for regular voting. You can't count these votes. If it works in favor of them, it doesn't. You're going to have arguments for. So, unfortunately, like I say, it's going to be a mess. I wish for the landslide one way or the other so that they could just do it and maybe look at it and go, hey, that actually works out pretty well. I think it'll be a learning experience. I think it'll work pretty well, but I don't think the losing party in any of that application is going to admit that it works pretty well. So,
it's interesting.
Like I say, you got the military voting, you got the mail-in voting, you got this. There's a lot more early voting in some places than before. You've got these headlines. Oh, there's lines of people that can't getting in line for early voting and can't get out. You've got and the polarization that I've been worried about for some time. I mean, the Black Panthers going to intimidate. You ain't going to intimidate. The Tea Party people are going to intimidate. I just think there's just so many potential flashpoints, and it's going to be just that close. That I think it's round one. It'll be interesting to see if we actually fulfill our constitutional obligation and can actually name a winner before Inauguration Day.
Well, here's the thing for me. It's fascinating because, Obama and the Democrats have been going nuts about this whole voter ID stuff, trying to act like the Republicans are trying to suppress the vote and using voter ID as a ploy to do that. What really makes this interesting to me is Chris Christie didn't have to do anything. Not one thing did he have to do. New York and New Jersey, that East Coast is, those people are going to go for Obama typically anyway. So there's nothing to gain by changing the game and everything to lose. So by him making a decision like that and putting it out there like that, I think speaks volumes to the Democrats through the community. They can no longer sit back and say they're trying to suppress the vote because Chris Christie just broke everything that's normal procedure in elections. Now, I understand this is an abnormal situation, but Chris Christie just opened that door to make sure people had a way to vote. So if the Republicans are trying to suppress the vote, Chris Christie sure blew that argument out the window, didn't he?
Yeah. And I think, like I said, I think it's good on a lot of levels. Like you said, one, I don't think there's really any doubt that New Jersey and New York are going Democrat. So it's kind of like Kentucky. If we could do that in Kentucky, everybody pretty much knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a safe move with respect to the popular vote, but I also think it's a very intriguing and interesting move towards modernizing elections. And that's always been one of my gripes. Always, even when I was fighting my case, it's like so much of what we do in elections is the only reason we do it is because we've kind of done it that way all along. Whether it's deadlines or whatever. It's
right.
We're doing stuff based on mail. We're doing stuff based on Pony Express or couriers or something like that. 150-year-old timelines and technologies and parameters. I think it's time to embrace it. I think it's everything. I see a good thing coming down on this. I foresee possibly being able to file electronically and have your petition signed electronically, which of course, if that's the road this goes down, will be an absolute nightmare for the two-party system that tries, like in Kentucky, that tries to lock out the third party. It's like, oh, my God, if you can vote online,
right?
Well, then can you sign a petition online? If you can sign a petition online, guys like Ken Mullman that need 5,000 signatures are going to have them in a week at no expense. Just a couple clicks of the mouse and say, I'll give this guy a shot. I want to hear what he's got to say. Quick click, here's my social, fight me. And I think it's about time we started moving that direction. It's unfortunate that it takes a tragedy like this that basically actually exposes the flaws of the existing system as far as paper ballots and things like that.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't like the idea of electronic voting.
It's technology to the rescue. Now, they'll have
to engineer
it to get out of it.
I don't like electronic voting in any way, shape, or form. I think the use of the diebold machines, I think the manipulation that they're using with all this electronic stuff now, you know, manipulating election results and everything else, we have no confidence whatsoever in the current system, and we know that anything online can be hacked. I'm living proof of it. I run five different daggone, you know, I have to run all these different antivirus programs consistently because they can get to me anytime they want. And you know, when you're talking about votes, they get to me to try to shut my mouth down. And when you're talking about voters and stuff, I mean, it's too easy to hack. Let's look at Anonymous, for example, what they've been able to do, you know,
yeah.
or look at the attacks on federal computers. I don't have any confidence in any kind of electronic voting system. I really don't. I would love to see everything go back to a paper ballot and you actually had people there, you know, verifying all the paper ballots and setting them up in stacks, counting them one by one. But I would love to see the independents being the ones counting them, not
the
parties. The
thing is I get into it, I also think, okay, you know, if you pay bills, what do you trust, you know, what do you trust more? Do you trust online with PayPal, or do you trust somebody getting hold of one of your checks and washing it for you?
Well, I totally get that, but we also know that.
And I mean, you look back. We talked about the mechanical ballots the last go around. We had a big brouhaha. It was over a mechanical ballot. That, you know, it's like, okay, you know, how hard is it to actually punch the little chat out? And we couldn't get it right. I think it's a good thing. And I think at some point, you know, there's not going to be. And look at it, paper ballots or not, you are still having the voter ID discussion. There's a lot of discussions going on now. I just think at some point it is what the technology is and stuff, and it is. Right. And I think if it yields a more inclusive voter and ballot access, there's going to be problems with everything. There's problems in Kentucky right now. If you're going to do a paper ballot, you walk in, you say you're somebody, and they died 3 weeks ago, they're not allowed to ask for your ID. You are. And you go to another precinct if you want, and you're somebody else. You really don't have a way of checking that. So they're going to defraud things. That's how I look at it.
The only problem we have with the Chads, though, Ed, I mean, let's face reality here. The only problem we have with the Chads, because it was a close race, and that was partisan hacks, trying to contend each and every vote they could possibly contend. That's why we need an independent source like the independent voters, for example, be the ones that are counting these daggone things, not the parties. We can't trust the parties to police themselves. And we found that in Florida in the Bush-Gore debacle. I mean, that's just the way it is. You know, and interestingly enough, too, I got to point this out because we've been talking about, you know, we started talking about Obama and Romney. You know, I've got friends all over the country. You do, too. You know, I've got a lot of friends in Ohio up around the Cincinnati area. And I was talking to a couple of them today because Ohio had early voting over the weekend. You know, they had a lot of people for early voting. And I was talking to them today. And what I'm being told coming out of Ohio is that only about a third as many voters have showed up to vote Obama that did in 2008 in the early voting portion of the election. They only had about a third of the turnout that they expected. And the Republicans were almost double what showed up in 2008. Now, if that's the case, and we can't verify that, this is just coming from people there in the know that work in elections and stuff up there that I know. If that proves true, Ohio is going to blow Obama out, which I don't buy. But Ohio is the swing state that every Republican who's ever been president had to win. If those numbers are true and that information is correct, you know, I think this whole argument about we're going to have three or four different states that are going to be like the hanging chad in Florida back in the 2000 Gore Bush election, I think that's a moot point because the only reason that was a point of contention was because the race was so close. I just got a feeling
that's where we're going to end up. Whoever loses is not going to be – whoever loses in a battleground state is going to – you know, the lawyers are already – racked up in the hotel rooms and ready to go. They've got their, you know, they got their little computers ready. They were just ready to pull out whichever paper they got to yank out to do it, you know, or filing based on this or this. So I just think there's going to be, And the truth of the matter is, I don't think it's just going to be one candidate. I think if Barack loses the very tight one in Ohio, only his people are going to sue. I think if Romney gets reasonably close, hair close to Obama in Pennsylvania, I think Romney people are going to sue. I think we're going to the battleground states. Probably it wouldn't surprise me if there's any pre-filing that's been done as far as legal briefs. It would just
right.
just file them and whatever, take it. But that's just my opinion. I mean, we could be wrong, and somehow or another you have a Chick-fil-A kind of phenomenon. Every conservative in the country votes, enough Democrats sleep in or their tires. If you get a flat tire in their car or something, it could happen. I don't know. But I just think whichever states are really, really close, there's going to be, even reasonably close, I think there's going to be some form of legal challenge, whether it's early voting, whether it's...
Well, there's going to be a legal challenge. There's going to be a legal challenge no matter what. The question is, can you overcome the challenge? And if the numbers are as big, if Romney gets over 300 delegates, and I don't buy that he's going to get that many, but I'm being told by many people that they believe that, and this is all across the country. I mean, Ohio... I'm already convinced Romney is going to win Ohio just based on the information I've gotten from a few sources today. And these are legitimate people. I mean, they've never been wrong. We've been working together for years. So I firmly believe them. I can't give you those things because it would get them in trouble. But then we've got other things coming out here. If you're in the military, who do you think you would favor in this election, a Mitt Romney or a Barack Obama?
Ron Paul.
If you're in the military, given those two choices, Mitt Romney or Barack Obama, who do you think you would side with typically? Or just off the top of your head, what would your gut tell you?
It's terrible of me to say this, but I'm not sure if I was in the military. I don't like some of the things that Mitt Romney has said, the thoughts of going blow, getting in there and mixing it up with Iran if the Israelis decide to do something.
Well, I'm going to let you off the hook.
I'm not real keen on that. But
I'm
going to
let you off the hook.
Doing the draw,
I'm going to let you off the hook. Because here's the deal. I mean, I am a veteran.
I want Gary Johnson. He'll let me come home and get a job.
I'm just talking about the Romney Obama. Because Gary Johnson won't get enough votes to make a difference in this
election. Right, right.
Okay, that's the size of it. The two choices we're going to ultimately have that's going to be president of the United States after this election over is Mitt Romney or Barack Obama. As a veteran.
If I'm a career soldier, Romney.
Okay.
He's looking at boosting military spending, and this is where I want to. If I'm spending the rest of my life in the military, great. Give me some new toys to play with.
Well, here's the deal. I've got members of the military in my family.
If I'm a student who just wants to get the GI Bill, I really just signed up so I could get some GI Bill access and get through the otherwise oppressive tuition rates in college. Then I might actually favor Obama if he can continue the drawdown.
Well, here's the deal. As a veteran, when you're in the military, you feel obligation to vote. You really do. So, the military is a strong voting bloc all on its own. And military people typically take voting more serious than any other voting bloc that I can think of. But here's the deal. As a veteran, looking at this election, if I look at it from a military standpoint, it's a clear-cut Romney choice over Obama. I come from a family of veterans. I've got family members and friends who are stationed overseas in Afghanistan right now that have been in Iraq in both wars and that have served willingly and proudly these United States. They're still serving today. And I've spoken to about a dozen of these soldiers that I know over the last couple of weeks. And bar none, Ed, every one of them says that nobody in the military can stand Barack Obama. And there's a reason I'm telling you this right now, because our good friend Dale the Truth gave us a link in the chat room. You guys can go into the chat room and catch all of these links, Dale. We always put them up in the chat rooms. But he gave us a link from a story coming out of thehill.com today from the GOP senators. It includes Senator John Cornyn of Texas, Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire, John McCain in Arizona, Rob Portman of Ohio, and Marco Rubio in Florida just sent a letter to Defense Secretary Leon Panetta because they're very concerned about the serious failure by the Department of Defense to make sure that our soldiers have ballots. The absentee ballots are not reaching the soldiers. There's thousands of ballots out there that our soldiers who want to vote and are fighting for the right to vote aren't being allowed the opportunity to vote in this election. Now, this isn't, in my opinion, just a happenstance. We don't have problems like getting absentee ballots out to voters ever in our history. But in this particular race, Obama has to have every vote he can get. And now all of a sudden we've got a problem getting absentee ballots to thousands of soldiers. And this is coming from the Obama administration. That's a serious concern for me and for our veterans. And this is why why I brought that up. Because this is something that was a story 2 months ago, Ed.
It needs to be validated. I mean, sometimes these things are political gamesmanship and stuff, but it needs to be validated. And that's what I'm talking about when I say this is round one. Because if there's any questions whatsoever, the election is not going to be validated. If these senators are doing it, that's part grandstanding. That's fine. You know, send your letter, whatever. That's whatever weight that carries. The weight that's going to be carried is when the legal filings go through and there's some sort of proof that all the ballots haven't been counted. So that's what I'm saying. It's when I say round one, this is exactly what I'm talking about. They're doing that, and then there'll be allegations of voter suppression in other places, and there'll be allegations of voter irregularities in other places, and then there'll be the parameters surrounding the absentee ballots for people and the early voting and like I say, it's just tomorrow evening is going to have a lot of drama, but take a chill pill. It's just getting started.
Well, I tell you honestly, I mean, if everything holds true, and I've talked to voters in Wisconsin, I've talked to people in Ohio, Colorado, I've got family in South Carolina. South Carolina's going to go Romney no matter what. But North Carolina appears like they're probably going to go Romney. All these swing states that we continue to talk about, with the exception of Pennsylvania, all the swing states we continue talking about, looks, if early feedback is any indication, it looks like Romney's going to sweep all but Pennsylvania, the swing states. If that's the case, you're talking about 315, 320 delegates or better, which is going to make the whole argument about the hanging Chad argument and all these lawsuits essentially meaningless. Because if that kind of a spread, nobody's going to be able to sit here and say that somebody stole the election like they tried in the Bush-Gore election in 2000. And that's what I'm interested to see tomorrow. I want to see what it's going to be. Now, mainstream media will have you believe that Obama has got a 1.5 to 2 point popular vote lead over Mitt Romney, but they have never, ever given Romney any credit for any kind of a lead whatsoever throughout this whole contest, even though popular opinion says that the mainstream media is wrong. So I'm kind of curious that tomorrow night. I can't wait till tomorrow night because I want to see how this really turns out. What's going to happen here? Is mainstream media going to be proven to be the liars that we know them to be, the manipulators that we know them to be, and finally, once and for all, shut them up and trying to decide presidential elections? It's going to be really interesting. It's going to be really interesting. And by the way, Paul, I see you in the chat room, buddy. Yes, I know. The only important contest today is Monday Night Football. All right, the Eagles and the Saints. So go ahead, Ed. I just saw that. I just started laughing. I apologize to our audience. But, you're on one thing and somebody just throws something up there and throw you out of sequence there. But, it's going to be interesting because I tell you, the number I keep hearing is Romney's going to win this with at least 300 delegates. That's what I keep being told.
I'll be honest. In a way, I hope there is a clear-cut winner, because I have, in the likelihood that there's not, there's going to be a world of disenfranchised people. There's going to be people thinking it was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're just going to run into all sorts of problems. A clear-cut winner, there's still going to be some people that aren't real happy, but they're not going to feel like, that their vote got stolen and they need to tear something up, to show their anger. So,
right.
I hope we have a clear-cut victory, but like I said, I just think it, you know, the loser in any given swing state already has an army of people up there, and if it's even, you know, if it's within a percent or two, forget it. They may call the networks may try and call something, but then the minute they do, you know, they're going to have to qualify their statements. It's like, well, but there's a legal challenge, so I think it'd be interesting to see, you know. I think big time winner, I'll be tickled. Either, you know, it would be nice for a change, but I don't see it coming.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, because, you know, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of talk here in Kentucky, you know, that the Republicans may actually pick up the 10 seats they need in the House to gain control of the House, and then they'll have the House and the Senate. Do you see that happening at all? And you know what? Hold on to that thought. I'll tell you what, let's take a break. This is going to be a long conversation. Let's take a quick break, and we'll go ahead and go to the end of the show, because I want to break down some of those races, including the 4th District. So I want to get into some of those. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and break all that down. Folks, you're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. We'll be right back with your calls, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. We'll be right back.
Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interests. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live. We'll not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
And I apologize. Apparently, you had a couple of seconds of dead air for some reason or another. And, you know, welcome to it. You know, we continue to get screwed up around this daggone place thanks to the internet trolls and these parties trying to shut us down. But the music hesitated trying to get started. Don't know why, but it finally kicked in. You know, we're going into break and we're talking about some of these state races and different things we want to get into. Ed, I got the funniest email today from Bill Atkins. For those who don't know, Bill Atkins is running against Tom Massey for the 4th District Congressional race. Bill Atkins is the Democrat. But the title on this email, check this out. The title on this email is Vote for Bill Atkins Twice. Vote Bill Atkins twice for Congress in the 4th District.
Vote early, vote often.
Well, you would think so, right? Well, apparently, and I was looking at this, and I'm like, hell, you know, this is a Democrat. Now, you know, obviously, with everything going on in this place where, you know, a lady was just arrested yesterday in Texas because she got caught voting twice intentionally, so she was arrested. But with all this going on about people voting, you know, multiple times in different states, different districts, everything else, how smart are you to put an email out like that? And on top of it, he gives a copy of the ballot, and he is actually listed twice. Him and Tom Massey both are, so is David Lewis. But apparently in the 4th Congressional District, they combined this race. You're voting for a candidate between Massey Atkins and Lewis for the full term, but then you also have to vote for one of them for the special election to finish out Jeff Davis's term. I don't remember ever seeing a situation where we had a special election and a real election for the same seat on the same ballot at the same time. Do you?
No, never heard of it.
So how did this happen? You know,
I have no idea. You know, Jeff Davis backed out quickly, so. But, you know, I guess if it's kind of, I can't imagine anybody's going to actually vote for one way and one the other, so. Yeah, Atkins is going to get smacked one way or the other. He's in that district in the 4th, which actually they sliced off my part of the county, and that's where I'll be voting, whatever reason.
it's just interesting to me.
It's probably the most Republican district in all of Kentucky. So
I'll be honest with you, Bill Atkins, Democrat.
Demographics are putting you know, they basically, the demographics just don't work for Atkins, so
right.
Yeah, at least you're having a little fun with it.
Well, Atkins ain't got half a brain either, in my opinion. I mean, this guy, for some reason, I'm on his mailing list. I'm not a Democrat. And by the way, Democratic Party, I don't know why you guys don't update your voter rolls every, oh, I don't know, 100 years or so, because I've continued getting all the email blasts from every Democrat candidate and from the Democrat Party headquarters. You know, because I'm supposedly a Democrat. I haven't been a Democrat in years, folks. Get your head out of your ass and update your rules. But, you know, the thing that bugs me about this, Atkins is not intelligent, in my opinion. I've been getting his emails for the last couple of months. He sends stuff all the time here. It drives me nuts because the guy truly has no clue. All he is Mr. Negativity. He can't tell you anything about any issue. All he wants to do is scream and holler. You know, the man's out to get him, and Thomas Massey's an idiot. That's all you get from it, which is typical in today's election cycle. But when I see an email that comes out, and the headline on the email is, vote for Bill Atkins twice, and then it goes on to explain to you how. To me, that was just hilarious, and that just goes to show the stupidity of that campaign. Why a campaign manager would allow an email to go out like that is beyond me. Because the blatant, you know, you know, the blatant implication there is vote early, vote often, just like you said. So this is interesting, and I'm still kind of concerned too with the fact that we allow an election, two elections on the same ballot, whether it's a special election to fulfill an unexpired term, and then the second election to for the whole term. This is two different elections, in my opinion. Don't like it, tough. But you don't put them both on it because that creates confusion for the voters, and that's what we're trying
to
get away from.
It's probably mandated by some constitutional, you know, but hey, since when did that matter in Kentucky? They can't constitutionally redraw the district, so whatever.
I know. It's confusing as hell. So District 4, I mean, you know, we haven't talked about that district race yet. District 4, I'll go ahead and tell you right now, I think Tom Massey is going to win that in a blowout. You know, when we look at some of the other races, I mean, do we really need to talk about the 3rd district with Congressman John Yarmuth versus Brooks Wicker? Or is that a no-brainer?
You know, the only thing that's going to be interesting there is I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, given the fact that Wicker, you know, just gotten very, very little support from the Republican Party and the establishment and any networks. I think it'll be interesting to see just how many votes a guy can get with almost no money. You know, it's kind of where he's at, you know, it's straight ticket voting or, you know, even if you don't know where your guy, you know, where Brooks Wicker stands, you hate Yarmouth to vote enough against, you know, to vote against him enough. So that would be, you know, in a way, that's going to be interesting to watch. It's like, okay, so how bad does the 3rd District dislike, you know, how many people dislike Yarmouth enough that they'll vote for somebody that they know very little about just because it's not Yarmouth? So,
well, you know, I agree with that.
Yarmouth's going to win it in a walk because thanks to redistricting, they sliced off some of the most conservative and heavily Republican precincts and put them in the 4th. So, you know, they just scooped out a huge section of, you know, scooped out a lot of Republicans and moved them out of the 3rd. So,
what they've done is they said, okay, we'll make it a war. So we'll give the 3rd District to the Democrats as long as they give us the 4th. So we still, you know, that's all that was a war. But, you know, when it comes to Wicker, I'm like you. Any vote Wicker gets, I think, is just an anti-Yarmouth vote because the people that I've talked to who have, you know, been out to Wicker events, you know, spoken with Brooks Wicker, have met Brooks Wicker and everything else, have walked away very unimpressed. They say the guy just don't have a clue. You know, he's not getting any support, and that's one of the biggest reasons why. You know, take the party out of the mix. You know, the party's not supporting him at all, which we expected, and the party's not going to waste resources on a guy that they don't think has a shot. That's party politics. We know that. But it's the individual donors, the grassroots donors, the people, you know, outside of the party, you know, headquarters of Champions Trace Drive, that aren't giving any money to Wicker either. And that's always a telltale sign.
Yeah.
You know, so Wicker has no shot. I think the votes he gets are probably going to be, like you said, an anti-Yarmouth vote, which, quite frankly, it's what I call the Brian Simpson effect. You know, to get back to the state races, and let's look at the Simpson to Larry Clark race in the 46th district right here. You know, Simpson is, I don't know what's happened to Brian Simpson. I like Brian Simpson on a personal level. He's a likable guy. But on a professional level, the guy is just clearly either believes he's something that he's not or doesn't have a clue about how things work. Because the Larry Clark race, Simpson's running against Larry Clark again in this election. Now, Simpson got, I think, a little over 40% in the last election against Larry Clark. But Brian believed those were votes for Brian. And that wasn't the case. Those were votes against Larry Clark. Back then, Brian had all the union support as well because they wanted to get Larry Clark out of there. Those same unions are suffering the repercussions, and you're not seeing them step to the plate for Simpson in this race. Now, a lot of that has to do with the fact that Brian illegally coordinated with Brent McKim of the JCTA and the USCW and the Teamsters. They all coordinated on some illegal campaign dealings in the last election and got caught. Brian's lucky he's not in jail right now. You know, so in this particular race, I don't see how he can even get close to those numbers again. Do you? I mean, 40% was one thing.
Well, yeah, without the money, you can't unseat it's hard to unseat that. Now, in defense of Brian, you know, he and I had discussed, because I kept asking him early, you know, way before he actually ran, like, when are you going to run? When are you going to run? He said he wasn't. He was actually counting on one of the Petons, which was, a well-known Republican mm-hmm. in that race. He was counting on, word was somebody else was going to run, and then at the last minute, nobody went for it. So Brian, you know, as we were talking last week, it's, you know, why the hell doesn't just two signatures, why doesn't somebody run? Well, that's pretty much what Brian did. I don't think, in my conversations in email and otherwise with him for, you know, leading up to it, it really wasn't going to go for it. But then nobody else did. So, you know, in agreement with what we talked about, he said, you know what? Clark deserves to have to run against somebody. So he threw his name in the hat. You know, he really wasn't going to go for it, as I understand, you know.
And that's misdirection, because Brian called me at the beginning of the year and asked me if I would help him if he decided to run. His first inclination was to run against Perry Clark. At that time, Chris Thieneman hadn't announced yet. His first inclination was to run against Perry Clark in the 37th State Senate District. And I told Brian in no way, shape, or form would I even be involved with a campaign of his, much less in that race. He had literally no shot at winning that. Then the second choice was Larry Clark. And I flat out told him, Brian, based on everything that happened in the last election, you know, try to give you advice. You didn't want to listen. You started listening to the wrong people that wouldn't do things the right way. You know, I'm not going to get involved in your campaign at all. So it was already a thought process. He wanted to run for one of those two seats anyway. Now, what he told you is entirely opposite of what he told me back in January. So, you know, that again is just another indication. I honestly hope, you know, and I mean this sincerely, and I'm not trying to be, you know, real mean to Brian or anything, but I hope this ends whatever political ambitions he thinks he has, because Brian at this point is not ready for primetime politics at any level. You know, and, you know, he is a single dad. He's got some responsibilities there, and this may be the time for him to focus on that and get the hell out of politics, because he's not going to be able to handle politics. He can't get his story straight now, what's he going to do if elected. You know, so those are going to be the top races I think we're looking at. You know, we talked a lot about the Metro Council races and things like that. But, you know, you just mentioned something a second ago, because we did point this out before. Why is nobody running in half of these races? We've got the Commonwealth attorney, not a Republican, stepped up. Now, I know they don't expect to win that race, but you've got to challenge these races. You know, nobody stepped up in that. The Metro Council races we've talked about, 1, 2, 4. District 2, for crying out loud, Barbara Shanklin is brought up on charges that are going to be heard, ironically, tomorrow, which I have a hard time understanding why they would start this case on Election Day. But, you know, hey, that's just me, you know. So we've got this situation. Nobody's running against her. It makes no sense to me. David James, a guy, you know, that I like. I mean, I like David. I'll tell the whole world now. When I put together my crime plan and everything else back in the 2006 mayor's race, the first person I sought out was David James, who was running the KBI, the Kentucky Bureau of Investigation, a new program up in Frankfort. And I got news for you. He is probably the biggest wealth of information you could possibly have when it comes to crime and problems in Louisville. And I love the guy. I really do. But nobody ran against him, and they should have. Jim King, Metro Council 10th District, no competition. You know, I don't get this. Some of these guys have problems.
The thing is nothing else. You would almost think that the incumbent, you know, like a James or a King, would welcome an opponent. You know, yeah, they're going to crush him. But it's, how boring can it get if you don't get a chance for a forum for your ideas? Because
right,
there's not going to be any debates. It's like, hey, you know, what the hell? Send me somebody to sharpen my claws on a little bit. Let's get out and debate. You know, like, turn the cameras on. I'm looking good. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, and that's exactly it. That's what really bothers me. I can't understand, you know, these guys not having any competition. I know David James wouldn't have a problem with competition. We've talked about that. You know, I talked about that with him before. He likes that because it keeps you on. A lot of these guys don't mind a competition. Sure, they're going to beat your ass, probably. But it also keeps them focused on the job at hand, too. When you don't try to run against somebody, you know, they have a tendency to get a little bit lazy and start getting that tunnel vision. So competition is a good thing in politics, and I can't understand why nobody's running in these races. And District 24, Madonna Flood, are you kidding me? You know, this woman is running for office without any competition whatsoever, and that should be that's a travesty of justice there, because as far as I'm concerned, aiding and abetting her felon husband should get her out of office anyway. But moving on to some of these other races real quick, 28th State Rep, Kentucky State Rep, Charlie Miller, Corey Colner. What do you think about that?
I like Corey Colner. I'll be honest, disclaimer, I donated money to Corey Colner. Not a lot, but, you know, I had made him because he and I really hit it off well last time I was a candidate. And I told him, I said, hey, I'll make you a bet. If the Republicans can refrain from suing the third party candidate, get off the ticket, by God, I'll make a donation to your campaign. So I did not too long ago. But I really like Corey Colner. I mean, he's a Mike Nemes kind of guy, just a straight shooter. I don't think there's a deceptive bone in the guy's body, and you need more of that.
I'm totally with you. Charlie Miller has never done anything at the state level. I mean, this guy is the grandfather guy that likes to tell stories when he can remember them, because he has a lot of memory problems these days too. How he can even drive back and forth is beyond me half the time. But, you know, this guy's an antiquated version of what we just absolutely got to get rid of. And Corey Colner is a fantastic guy. He's a young guy. He's very sincere, very honest. Corey, you know, he ran for PVA against Tony Lindauer in the last election. And, you know, we got very tight with Corey. I've spoken with Corey 1,000 times. You're not going to find a better guy. I'm like you. He's a Mike Nemes kind of a guy. You're not going to find a better guy to run for office than Corey Conner. And this would be a great fit for him and the district if he can pull it off. Unfortunately, that, you know, all Democrat little arrow that they have on these things might hurt him. But Corey needs to have that office, and we'll see what happens, because it certainly can't do any worse than Charlie Miller. Moving on to some other races, we've got the 30th. We've got Tom Burch and Aaron Wilson.
Well, I've heard Tom Burch's residency is going to be questioned, but Burch is an institution. You know, aside from that, Burch is an institution, so I don't know. Hard to beat.
Well, you're right, and that's the thing. I think Burch has got that one locked up.
You know,
Ron,
I'll just hop in while we're talking about that, and the same thing for the 33rd, the district I live in. Ron Krim is an institution. He's old, but he's an institution, and he hasn't done anything to embarrass us. So Ron Krim goes in a walk, as he has at least the last half dozen years.
Well, that actually was the next race I was going to mention, so glad you did it. Yeah. Ron Krim is going to beat Rick Howes, and he's going to beat him quite easily. You know, you move on to some of the other races. There's really not a lot out here. You've got Mike Nemes, of course, we just spoke about. Now, here's going to be an interesting race, because Mike Nemes, guys, I'm telling you what, this guy's legit. I mean, he is above board in every way. You know, I research everybody, and Mike Nemes is exactly who he portrays himself to be publicly. And I've been out with this guy at different events, and people come to him from all over, not just his district. I mean, people throughout the city of Louisville who need something done in Frankfort come to Mike Nemes, whether they're in his district or not, and I've never seen Mike turn them down or send them somewhere else. He calmly pulls out He calmly pulls out a piece of paper and a pen, writes down their issue and contact info, and I'll get back with you. And I've never heard one complaint where Mike Nemes did not follow up and get back with that individual, whether they're in his district or not. That's class all the way. But he's running against a well-known name here, even though this guy ain't nothing, but the name is very familiar. Denver Denny Butler. Is that going to create some problems for Nemes in the 38th?
Well, I think if it's done on the merits of it, of course, Mike Nemes ran against, believe it, an incumbent last time and got him. You know, so I mean, he made a strong showing as an underdog. I think Mike Nemes can win again. I think he will win again. I think perhaps for me the most confusing thing about that whole race was the Courier Journal endorsement. They endorsed a guy with no experience, but yet at the same time said Mike Nemes is good with working, you know, across party lines and everything, and they said nothing but good stuff about it. But we're endorsing the Democrat. It's like, oh, God. You know, just smack your head into a wall while you're at it. I mean,
yeah, big surprise.
I would certainly hope that the voters of that district will pick Mike Nemes, because they did very, very well. And just the kind of guy he is for a freshman representative, he got noticed in Frankfort. He became a player pretty damn quick because he is such a straight shooter, and because of, you know, his background. He's a Republican, but he was also a union steward. I mean, this guy, he can see the big picture, and he's just a totally unpretentious guy, like you said. Just a great guy.
He is. He really is round out there. We've already talked about the Larry Clark, Brian Simpson race. Let's get one more race in here real quick, then we'll cut off of here. Joni Jenkins and Gail Powers in the 44th.
Well, Jenkins is she's an institution. You know Gail, I know Gail. And let me tell you what, she's got a lot of fight in her. She's got a lot of energy. And, you know, I think Jenkins will win, because Jenkins is such an institution. And unfortunately, that's just, you know, incumbency has its advantages, you know, and whether it's a program or whatever, whether you get the media, like the Courier Journal, all behind you and everything, thinking you're the greatest thing since sliced bread because you agree with them on everything kind of thing. But I definitely like to see a tight race. And I think, Frankfort deserves Gail Powers, because she is definitely, she's a research animal. You know, she delves into the details. So I think it'd be fun to see her in Frankfort, delving in and actually reading every single piece of legislation that comes up and being able to critique it. Like, good. That would be refreshing.
Well, I tell you, when it comes,
I think Jake can get her on name recognition.
Well, we're on overdrive right now. We're going to finish this one. Joni Jenkins, Gail Powers. I got to tell you, the first time I met Gail Powers was at a neighborhood group meeting a few years ago out here in the Southwest. And we were talking about a lot of issues back then. And one of the things we were talking about, this was at the very beginning of Obamacare, was right after they came out with that 1,900-plus page Obamacare proposal. And it was a big story at the time. And, of course, you know, I that's what I do. I cover stories. Well, you know, we were sitting outside smoking a cigarette. And I imagine that, right, talking about Obamacare, health care plan with a cigarette in your mouth. But, you know, if we're sitting outside smoking a cigarette, and we were talking about Obamacare, and I was immediately shocked and impressed with Gail Powers because Gail had actually read all 1,900-plus pages of that bill. This thing hadn't been out 2 or 3 weeks yet, folks. While Nancy Pelosi was telling the whole world, you know, we need to pass it before we can see what's really in it, Gail Powers knew what was really in it because she read it. And, you know, I was very impressed with the knowledge that she brought to the table. And Gail is a bulldog personality. She's not going to sit back and let you railroad anything. You know,
yeah.
So there's a lot to like about Gail Powers. On a contrast side of that, there's not a lot I like about Joni Jenkins. There never has been. Joni Jenkins, in my opinion, is an establishment hack on part of the Democratic mafia here in the state of Kentucky. You know, if you were to vote purely on issues, knowledge, and capability, Gail Powers should win this election hands down. And I say that sincerely. But I also say quite as sincerely, the last time Gail ran against Joni was in the last election, and Gail was found to be an illegal candidate, not because she had a residence problem, she had a signature problem. Gail is one of those people who is what you consider a constitutionalist. Her mom was very, very proud of Gail for running for this race. Her mom was one of the signatures on her ballot application, and her mom lived just outside of the district. Neither one of them realized that her mom was right past that line. So she was disqualified accordingly, so we didn't get to see the race we should have seen. I'm looking forward to this race, but I think Joni Jenkins is going to win this easily just because of the Democratic machine and just because of the name recognition. Gail is not a great communicator. You know, when you get to know Gail Powers, you realize how great she really is. But a lot of people just don't have that kind of time, especially when they're running a campaign. So I think Joni's going to win this a little bit easier than I would feel comfortable with. But, you know, props to Gail. I got to give her credit because she's a great lady trying to do a great thing.
Yep.
She's just not going to be given a chance to. So anyway, here we go, man. That's all we've got for tonight. You got anything? Go ahead. Final thoughts, Ed.
Well, like I say, final thoughts, get out, vote early. You know, Kentucky's a foregone conclusion. Now, one of the things that you see a lot of the libertarians putting up, it's a foregone conclusion. So, you know, if you're not real pleased with the two-party system, the way it's working right now, you kind of wish that it would be a little easier for the third-party guys to break in. And if nothing else, just mix it up a little bit. This is an opportunity, you know. Consider voting down ticket a little bit, you know. Brock, you got Brock, you got Mitt. And honestly, it's probably going to be a lopsided victory for Mitt. But, you know, you want your vote to make a difference in Kentucky. A few percentage points for somebody like the Libertarians or, you know, a straight independent or something could go a long way towards easing up that stranglehold that the Democrats and Republicans that the two-party system has on our ballot access and our electoral process in this state. So that's just food for thought, but by all means, first and foremost, vote your conscience. There's a wide variety of choices on this presidential ballot. So you shouldn't have, there really is a very wide selection of candidates on this ballot. So you shouldn't have any trouble if you research them a little bit, figuring out exactly which one reflects your views the most.
Well, there you go. And, you know, it's interesting, too. I mean, you know, Dale, the Truth actually says that a lot, too. In the state of Kentucky, or the Commonwealth of Kentucky, I should say, you know, it's basically a foregone conclusion that Mitt Romney is going to win Kentucky no matter what. So if you want to send a message to the establishment, then vote for anybody but Romney and Obama in the presidential election. So you're mimicking that argument, too. Dale, the Truth says the same thing. You know, Gary Johnson and all these other candidates are out there. For me personally, you know, I've got to say, the only thing I want people to do is go vote. I don't care if you vote for Romney. I don't care if you vote for Obama. I gag saying that because I can't stand Barack Obama. But the reality is that people need to be informed and then go vote. You can vote on the issues. You can vote on the information. You can vote once you're educated. But to vote just to vote for anybody, whether that's third party or anybody else, just so you can send a message to the establishment, you still don't know what you're voting for. So for me, it's all about education. One of the worst things that I saw today, I was on Facebook going through my Facebook mail. You know, yes, we do have email accounts there as well. You can go to Louisville Politics on Facebook. You can go to Ed Springson on Facebook. But, you know, when you look at these, I saw somebody actively seeking direction on votes. He told everybody, you know, he lives in the East End, gave the area that he lives in. I'm not going to embarrass the guy by giving his name. He says, I'm open to suggestions for who to vote for out here because I don't know anybody. Somebody send me information that lives out here about that they know a candidate they want to vote for. So this guy's sitting here telling the whole world, I'm not educated enough to vote, so tell me who to vote for and I'm going to do it. That
yeah, I'm not is educated alarming. Enough. I'm not educated enough yet already even.
Right. And that is alarming to me. And that's what we've got to overcome in this country. You know, it doesn't matter whether you like certain candidates on a personal level, you know, but you at least deserve to get educated. It's just like Romney and Obama. We've been listening to lies for months and months and months from both sides. And very few people still know the truth about their voting records or what they've done. And as hard as we've tried to get that out there, I'm still called a liar over simple things like the Judge Cunningham thing. Everything's open record. It's online. Easy to find. You're listening to this show, this podcast, online. You have access to the tools. You just have to have the wants to get educated. So when you go cast your vote tomorrow, make sure you're doing that. When you talk about voting and sending a message, send a message to the establishment by voting because you are educated and know what you're voting for, not necessarily who you're voting against. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, me and Ed will be here, of course, at 7 o'clock. We will be doing live updates as they happen. I would anticipate we'll start getting some of those updates come in somewhere between 7 and 7:15 to start. So we'll do some live updates and kind of talk about how things are looking across the country as we go along. With that in mind, folks, that's it for tonight. Mr. Martin, we'll see you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. All right, man. You folks have a great night. We'll talk to you later. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government. Give a bailout.